Hello and welcome to Sean White's Solar and Energy Storage Podcast. Today we have a special treat for you. We have the purple-haired solar TikTok sensation, Solar Boy. I think he actually has a real name, but I don't know, should we go there? Do you want to keep your anonymity?
No, we can stick with Derek the Solar Boy for now.
Okay.
I've had issues at times with having my name fully known, so we'll just stick with Derek the Solar Boy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe we could even hint to it, though. Like, I know your last name, to me, it kind of means something renewable energy. We'll just leave it at that.
All right.
All right. So that's really cool. We have our first anonymous person. I actually thought about doing an anonymous podcast and then like maybe disguising my voice and saying
that
would get me in trouble otherwise. Like, so I could get canceled that way.
You know, it all works great until somebody figures out who you are, and then who knows what happens. So
yeah, well, it wasn't that hard for me to figure out who you were, because I was looking on LinkedIn one day and I saw one of your videos, and I think it was about UL 3741. It's not that new, but it's the rapid shutdown UL listing, which is kind of cool, and we can talk about that. And I was like, oh, this guy is cool. He's fun to watch. And I thought maybe there is another guy that's like a wannabe comedian in a solar job, just like me. So,
yeah. Yeah. If we all entertain, that's what we do in trying to make content that appeals to people and educates and draws them in.
Yeah. And if you come down to it, I'm sure that there's lots of comedians. Dave Chappelle really wants to be a solar guy, but he can only be a comedian. So it kind of makes up for it. All right. So let's see. So we mostly do this podcast. It's always been an audio thing, but I've thought about bringing a little video into it. But most people, I believe, just still listen to podcasts instead of watching them, or at least that's what I do. But let me just kind of let people know, you are a guy with purple hair, a purple beard, and you have an SB on your hat. And sometimes you have your shirt on and you sell them at your Solar Boy website, and you spell it Solar B-O-I. And
that's right.
I was going to ask you a couple of things, like SB in the solar industry kind of reminds me of the SMA Sunny Boy. So is that another reason why you're trying to remain anonymous, so the SMA executives don't come looking for you?
No, but that's funny though. So they know who I am, but that shouldn't be a problem. When you're coming up with a moniker in the solar space, kind of the rule is one must use the solar in your name somewhere, and solarboy.com happened to be available. So it seemed to work just fine.
Yeah. So that's once again, we'll just mention that that's solarboi.com.
That's right.
I was going to ask you too, like, is there any former use of BOI? Does that mean anything different? I think I looked it up just now and it was like Solar Boy. And I just like wanted to see if it was in the news. And I think it was like the Philippines has something like the Board of Industry.
Oh, interesting. Well, so it's kind of like another word for dude, I would say, like semi-gender neutral. I pictured it like if you're a solar boy, you're really into that. Or if you're a science boy, you're really into science and that's your thing.
So are we differentiating between that boy with the I spelling, the B-O-I instead of the B-O-Y?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, cool. Quite a while ago, like we're talking decades ago when I was in college, my roommate and good friend, he was making fun of this picture of me that it was at my grandparents' house. And it was my super dorky high school picture. And so they wrote Joe Boy on it and they spelled it with a B-O-I. So maybe I was there first. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's been around for a while.
And I'm trying to figure out, too, if they were making fun of me, but I guess not, because you are riding that boy wave high.
Actually, if you look up Solar Boy far enough, I made my name before I knew that this existed, but there's apparently like somebody who made like a homebrew solar rover type something. I forget what exactly it does, but like you can find it on YouTube. There is another thing out there called Solar Boy, you know, just interesting trivia.
And the other thing, was it B-O-Y or?
It was B-O-I. So Solar B-O-I.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Cool. And then we also have Solar BOS. I bet you know what that means too, right?
Solar Boss. Yep. I've worked with their products.
Yep. That's a company. And then we also talk about where they got their name from. I'm assuming Balance of Systems. And so I like to be a little educational, throw some educational stuff in there every once in a while. So Balance of Systems, we're talking about the stuff besides the PV and probably the stuff besides the inverter. So like combiner boxes and wires and conduit and all that kind of stuff.
All the non-flashy stuff that is equally or more important to the functioning of the system.
Well, you say non-flashy, but what about flashing, Solar Boy?
Exactly. You know, flashing's important too. Or, you know, if you're using butyl and not flashing, that's also flashy.
Yeah.
Or not flashy.
So maybe we just have to make sure we're using non-flashy flashing.
Yeah. Yep. Whatever keeps the water out of the roof, man. That's all we need.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Just out of curiosity, so you have purple hair. Is that natural? It's natural, right?
I mean, it sort of gradually turned into this color over time. Like, it's kind of like an aging thing. Like, some people gray, I just turned purple. That's kind of how
I'm
that works.
I'm jealous of you. I really want that. I might have to steal that from you and go purple myself.
So. Hey, go for it, man. You know, I don't own the color purple, and it's a pretty great color. So more purple people, the better.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of the Phoenicians? They were the...
Not sure.
They were the people like way back in the BC days.
Oh, yeah. Like historically.
Yeah, historically. And they were also called the sea people. And there was some kind of mollusk that made purple dye. And they made a lot of money off of that they could trade purple dye for gold and stuff like that. And they were a big rival to the Romans. In fact, you probably heard of Hannibal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's talking to purple people. Do you have any elephants?
No, elephants.
Not yet, but it's a good
way. I might have some stuffed ones around here, though. Got some.
I know. We got to look for that. And so let's see. Like, so some other things about you, like what you do is you're like an O&M solar guy.
I'm an O&M solar guy. So I got my start back in 2014 in the solar space. I was like a general electrician from like 2008 to 2014. And then I jumped over to solar, started on install, foreman for a couple of years, and then jumped over to doing service because that stuff really fascinates me. I love coming in and trying to fix a problem, right? Seeing what went wrong, fixing it for the long run. So ever since probably, what was it, 2017, 2018, I've been doing service for service and warranty stuff. So
do you got
that's
any,
sort
like,
of my brief history.
Good, interesting examples of something that you've found, or you've got some kind of special secret way of figuring out what's broken and how to fix it?
Oh man, it's hard to like sift through what is the most interesting things that I run into, right? But there's always something new. You know, at this point, pretty good at tracking down ground faults, still working on a good method of nailing arc fault issues, because those are never easy to track down. But at some point, when you start doing service, you hit problems and you're like, how could I ever figure out what in the world this problem is? Like, where is this coming from? How do I fix it? It takes a couple of years. But once you hit like year three or four, you start hitting like, oh, I see that problem. And this wouldn't be obvious to most people, but like this problem rhymes like this problem I experienced like a year and a half ago, and it cuts down on troubleshooting time immensely if you can like find your shortcuts and start building that intuition over time.
Like an arc rhymes with a spark.
Yeah. Yep.
You can see better convenient. In the dark.
That's right. Yep.
And you can figure it out on a solar arc inverter, stuff like that. I noticed also that you're like, seem to be really good at TikTok. Do you know, like, have you checked it out? Is there any solar person that's got better TikTok than you?
Oh yeah. So there's definitely other solar TikTokers out there. Like the big one is Solar Goat, my man, Brandon Serene. He's in Utah.
Oh man, I got to get more TikTok-y.
Yeah, dude, he's great. He is fantastic for like the short, pithy, like interesting short videos. Like I tend to, when I'm making a video, it's because I wanted to talk about something, but he's really good at show and tell. So he's out there, Solar Slayer's out there. I think he's in Maryland, but there's a few of us out there.
Like for instance, just like how many people watch your videos, or like, do you have any examples?
That's a good question. So I will vary between what kinds of videos I post. And recently I've been trying to work out the more, you know, my process for doing things, getting that all sorted out so I can go faster without having to spend as much time. At the moment, I have 30,000 followers on TikTok. And on like a good video, like a video that, you know, I'm explaining something, that'll often get from like 10 to 50,000 views. It depends on how
That's
consistent I am at a time. Yeah, it's impressive. Like, I didn't really expect exactly how big the appeal would be.
I mean, that's
for
probably like
mine.
Almost in comparison to like a certain part of the solar industry or something, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Once you get to like big numbers like that, it's hard to sort of parse and figure out what is actually good or big and what isn't. And of course, as with YouTube, as with, you know, Instagram, all these social networks, they have algorithms, right? So if you're not playing the certain part of the algorithm that TikTok wants you to play at any given time in the specific way they want you to, you might have no views for what would normally be a really good video. So it's a lot of guessing and like riding waves and trying to figure it out as you go.
Awesome. Yeah, I noticed like you're also on other platforms like Instagram and YouTube. So for YouTube, how many more views do you need until you pass Mr. Beast?
You know, anywhere from 4 billion to a zillion billion, like, you know, it'll take me a little bit, but That's within reach.
It's really close. I mean, that's not nearly as many electrons that there are in an amp, like a Coulomb second, or we can say.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you really look at that scale, that's really achievable.
Yeah, you're almost there. And so another thing about TikTok, we know that most things, it's made in China, like a lot of our solar modules and all that kind of stuff. Do you think since you have so many solar videos up there, are they going to start doing the solar tariffs on your videos?
That would be fun. Boy, the whole story around TikTok, I don't know how closely you follow TikTok and politics, but politics really likes beating around TikTok a bunch and threatening to ban TikTok and all this and things like that. And I have all manner of opinions on that. It's probably not worth going into because that's just going to be a big soapbox. It is interesting to be a creator on TikTok and not know exactly what the US government's going to do about it at any given time.
Well, you know what? Doing likes on TikTok, that's like voting in China. That's like democracy. So let's hear it for Xi Jinping and democracy. Woo!
All right.
Okay, sensitive subject. Probably don't want to like hit that too hard. And so we are kind of making fun of things and all that. So
that's fine.
What do you think too about like you're doing long videos and short videos? What do you think works better? Or you do a little bit of each, I guess, probably.
Yeah. I mean, my style has always trended toward longer videos. So like back when I started like with this idea of kind of doing day in the life of a solar technician, seeing what I see and talking about that, showing it, how do you fix it, that kind of stuff. Back at that point, the maximum that TikTok would let you film was a minute, I think. And then it upped to allow for 3 minutes. And then at that point, I was like, you know, I could do this. That would be fine. I could probably make videos like that. And then they upped it to 10 minutes. And that was the point that really like gave me the freedom to explore the space. So my videos on TikTok typically run from like 4 to 5, 6 minutes. I could absolutely go longer, but you want to edit that down pretty hard to keep the pace up. The pace on TikTok is often much faster than it would be on something like YouTube. But I do eventually want to land on YouTube as sort of my primary place for posting stuff because that allows for really long form stuff. And for certain troubleshooting problems, you kind of need 20 minutes to kind of show and walk through everything and everything that's interesting about a problem.
Yeah, maybe you could come up with some kind of like TikTok-y solar dance. You know, they have all this TikTok.
It has crossed
dances.
My mind. Yeah. Solar Fred and I talked about doing something like that at RE Plus this last year. But
you know Solar Fred. Yeah, I just put him on the podcast. So, yeah. So
no, he's great.
Awesome. Yeah, yeah. Solar Fred, that's his alias. His real name is Tor Valenza, and he will already be up by the time this is aired on the podcast. Cool. Yep. And so I noticed that you have like multiple NABCEP certifications. You want to tell me what they are?
Yeah. So I have PV installer. Forgive me if I mix up the actual like real names of the things, but it's the installer one.
Yeah. PVIP, PV installation PVIP. Professional. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. PV CMS, commissioning and maintenance specialist.
Correct. Yeah.
And then system inspector, PVSI.
Mm-hmm. Great. Awesome.
Those are the ones I have so far. Those are good. I haven't gotten around to the battery one yet, which just released like Christmas.
Yep. Yeah. So I have done all of them there that you mentioned and the energy storage one, and I have classes for all that kind of stuff. So check it out. It's solarshawn.com. S-E-A-N is how to spell Sean the correct way. Anyway, that was my little public service announcement there, my advertisement.
Solar Sean, that feels, I don't know, that feels a little derivative of my name. I feel like maybe we need to have a conversation about that.
Yeah, my people will be talking to your people, man.
All right.
Yeah, NABCEP's a really cool thing. So I just thought maybe I'd even ask you a little bit about what the NABCEP certifications have done for you or when did you start getting them, things like that.
So at the time that I started getting them, it was more of a, this is probably something I should do at some point type of thing. Like, I'm on the East Coast. Over here, there's not a ton of people asking for NABCEP stuff yet. I mean, it is increasing, I will say. But at the time, I was more focused on going and getting a bunch of master's licenses. So I have master's licenses in like New Jersey, Ohio, Maryland, surrounding area states. And then
master
after that,
solar
I was like,
boy.
Yeah, that was a lot of work, but you know, it's good
and,
stuff.
And so you were talking about master electrician, and some states have master electricians and some states don't. Like in California, we would just call it electrical contractor's license.
And that's what it is in Ohio and New Jersey as well, as electrical contractors. And then I think West Virginia, Virginia, Delaware, those more have master electrician and like journeyman electrician titles. Pennsylvania doesn't have anything. I don't think New York does either statewide.
And we also have
journeyman electricians. Yeah,
journey
person, something like that. I hasn't quite gotten there yet, but.
No, actually, I just had somebody message me yesterday saying that they were a JW, so journeywoman.
Okay,
so,
nice. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, so when I did my NABCEPs, it was more to like sort of prepare for the future, looks good on resume type of stuff. Although we had some companies ask us if we have commissioning and maintenance specialists, as that kind of gets to be a bigger thing in the industry. You know, we've had the big surge of solar installations from like, when did it start? Like 2008, 2009-ish onward. So these systems are starting to age, inverters failing, bad wire management coming to fruition. And, you know, they need people to come and maintain this stuff. And so there are certain companies that want to see that as like an official, like commissioning and maintenance specialist or system inspector, something like that. So
that's awesome. Yeah. And so NABCEP too, by the way, stands for North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners. And they are the primary standard for certifications in the solar industry, I think pretty much for the world, but of course it's called the North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners, but people all over the world have NABCEP certifications. And if you get all of the PV certifications, you have as many letters, in fact, more letters than the alphabet. So that's pretty cool.
Yep, that doesn't surprise me. Boy, there are a lot of certifications. And one of the biggest questions I get, like in terms of NABCEP, is like, what is the NABCEP I actually need to go after? And can I just get commissioning and maintenance specialist? Do I also need system installer or installation professional?
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. And that's definitely confusing for people, but.
Yeah, I get that question all the time and maybe we could answer it. So what I usually recommend to people is if you really want to go for it, go for the PVIP. That's the PV installation professional. And that is the gold standard solar certification. However, now they just came up with the energy storage installation professional, the ESIP. But anyway, the PVIP was pretty much the first one. They used to call it the PV installer certification. And some people I see, they're saying, oh, maybe I should get the designer. But the PVIP is very hard to tell the difference from the PVIP and the designer when you're taking the test. But once you get the PVIP, the other ones you can pass without really studying, in my opinion, at least. And that would go for the PV technical sales, the installer, all of them. And so I usually recommend people just going for the PVIP. And then there's the PV Associate, which is a NABCEP certificate that you can earn. And the PV Associate is something that somebody that knows how to take a test could study for a week for and perhaps pass the exam. I've seen it happen many times. And a lot of people will do both. And I oftentimes recommend that somebody goes for the PV Associate. And then if they want to go all the way, they go for the PVIP, and then they can take other ones too in the meantime. And I think too, a lot of people in the industry that are not out there doing what you and I are doing, that are not the super technical people, even the CEOs and stuff like that, they should at least do the associate exam. It's amazing to me how many people that I've worked with that don't just take a week, 40 hours worth of study in something like that, and just go for the associate. In fact, people that are already in the industry, they don't even need the whole 40 hours. And they can pass it. I used to teach classes where we would give the associate in person. It was kind of more of a thing back then, but now you can take the exams at your house. And we would start class on a Monday, finish class on a Friday, give the test. And I would have people in my class that would pass the associate exam without knowing anything about solar or electricity. And I'm not trying to say that. Yeah, I'm not trying to say that it's like super easy or anything. They're studying and things like that. And it's not that easy for everyone. but somebody that's taken tests before, or maybe has a little bit of college under their belt, something like that, they can do it. I've had people that were in alcohol treatment centers that passed it that way. Just, you know, they have 5 days, four nights to study, and they pass the exam. So it's not the hardest thing to do. And it lets people know about the basics of like where the sun's going to be in the sky, things like shading, electricity, the different characteristics of PV modules and stuff like that. So anybody that's out there that's in the industry that doesn't have at least the associate, come on, man, what's your excuse?
Yeah, I mean, as with any like certification, it's meant to establish some amount of credibility, right? Even if the associate isn't like the most complicated thing in the world, it still cements you as like, you have some experience in solar. You basically know what you're talking about. You might not be as expert as somebody who has the PVIP, but it lets people know that you have some amount of experience with this stuff, some amount of knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've seen companies too, where like some outsider professional CEO comes in and they think they're going to run the show and then they end up going under. And I kind of think that if they just would have taken the time to have a little bit of basic knowledge instead of complaining how busy they were all the time, that they would have survived. They would have known what was going on.
Yeah, that's a super interesting point. And one of the things that I love the most about one of the previous companies I've worked for is they did training for everybody that got hired. No matter what position you were in the company, you took a basic solar course like PV 101, just so you know, understand the industry a little bit, right? So even if you're just crunching numbers, finances here and there, whatever, you at least know what industry you're working in and it can be more effective for the entire company just by having some amount of baseline of knowledge.
Yeah, I do a lot of classes too for companies. Like 2 weeks ago, I had 30 people in this really cool solar company in Brentwood, California, hired me to come out there and teach their 30 installers. And they're signing up for the associate exam. Maybe there's one taking it right at this minute.
So nice.
Pretty cool for the installers there. So one of the things that I wanted to talk with you about is we've got some of these new systems that are doing UL 3741. And that was the video that you did that caught my eye and was like, I need to talk to this dude. And it's kind of controversial too. So we've got rapid shutdown, and let's kind of maybe tell people what rapid shutdown is. It was put into place for firefighter safety because firefighters were afraid of getting shocked, and we don't want firefighters to go let it burn. And firefighters don't wear fall protection. You don't tie yourself to a burning building and spray water all over the electrical parts and stuff like that. And they're not electrical experts and things like that. So the firefighters sometimes just going like, it's got solar on it, let it burn. And we don't want that to happen. And so they had some firefighters and things like that. They were on these different committees and things, and they came up with rapid shutdown. And at first there was three different methods for rapid shutdown. We call it 1, 2, 3, ABC. They changed it in different versions of the code. And the first method is the method that we're going to talk probably a little bit more about, which is it's got to be a PV hazard control system listed and tested piece of equipment, and that's UL 3741. The second method is 80 volts within 30 seconds, and that's inside of the array. And the third method was for BIPV, and they got rid of the third method in the 2023 NEC, but it was if there's no metal parts, it's harder to complete a circuit and things like that. And so kind of the controversy that we have here is you're doing module level power electronics, which is the second method, and people don't like it sometimes because it's more work and it costs more. And then there's this new 3741 way of doing things where they can kind of get around that. But still with the UL 3741, you could list a microinverter to it. In fact, Enphase has, I know at least for their microinverter that takes two PV modules in series. And so you made a really cool video about that. So let's have some input from you.
Oh, boy, it's been a decade. And when I started in the solar industry, I had no knowledge of any of this or that this was coming, right? But over the years, as we were impacted more and more, 2019 rolled around and we started having to use module level rapid shutdown all the time. And then in like 2021, something like that, we started seeing UL 3741 systems rated that we could then not use module level rapid shutdown. You could either put an inverter right next to it, or actually that's pretty much the main way people do that, because you still have array level shutdown regardless, but
yeah, and we had that up until January 1st, 2019, even on the 2017 NEC, we still could have done the array level shutdown.
Right. Yes. Well, so, no, 2017 still required rapid shutdown, like module level rapid shutdown.
Let's see. So for all of the different inside the array methods in the 2017 NEC, it actually had a date in there, which I called the 2019 NEC. And so yes, it was January 1st, 2019.
That's great.
I know, because they only come out with an NEC every 3 years. And so mm-hmm. I see you diving into your NEC book there, real electrician. And so we could do this array level shutdown where you just shut off the conductors going up to the roof and to the array boundary, which is a foot from the PV or the racks and things like that. And so it seems like it kind of came back, and it kind of first came out with, like, was Solega, Iron Ridge, SMA, a couple other companies mm-hmm. like Hellerman Titan and things like that, Raytray. And they had this system where you could still have metal framed PV modules, and on a commercial roof, you could go up to 1,000 volts after shutdown. Mm-hmm. And so it's controversial. And so, by the way, too, like, I don't take sides. I figure that that's my job, but also you can't offend me. And the more you take a side, I'll get a kick out of it. So, like, don't feel bad. Like, you know, if you have some strong feelings about it, I have friends that have strong feelings on both sides of mm-hmm. the issue. So,
yeah. So my whole thing, again, I take the perspective of somebody who's coming in and maintaining these systems, and I see how these systems fail all the time, right? That's my entire job, is I go in and look, and there's something wrong. I have to go and fix it. It is indisputable that the most systems that I go back to fix or repair things are module level power electronic systems. The math is really, really hard to get around, because if you have a system with 200 panels, you might have, I'm drawing a blank on like how many inverters that might be, but say it's two pretty big inverters. If you're doing module level rapid shutdown, you need to have a device under every single, or sometimes one under every two panels. So if you have 200 panels on a roof, you've just increased it from being only two pieces of power electronics, your inverters, to 202 pieces of power electronics. And like, smaller electronics can be more hardy. They've done better things over the years to make stuff more reliable, but it's still nowhere near as reliable as just string level inverters. Mm. Just been my experience.
Yeah. And so, and that argument too is like, you can compare having, like, in your case, it would be two pieces of electronics, two inverters, to having like 200 pieces of electronics with module level shutdown.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the other thing is, there's a lot of RSDs out there that are really specific with.
And also, when you say RSDs, just some people might not know what that is. So RSD would be sort of like a slang term for rapid shutdown. And so you mean the device.
A rapid shutdown device, yeah.
That's going behind the module. We got to get that solar module installer glass slapper lingo down there for some people that are not out there slapping glass, which means installing solar. So, mm-hmm, so the perfect RSD that you're talking about, there's some like Tygo, AP Systems, and other companies that make these things that go mm-hmm. behind the PV modules that can just shut it off at the PV module level.
Yeah, which is, on the surface, it seems like a pretty good compromise between having to do optimizers, which tends to be a lower efficiency over time, even if you have slightly shaded arrays. There have been studies done on this. I've seen people independently back this up in YouTube videos and stuff like that. Optimizers tend to not produce as much power.
Information to YouTube videos, especially your channel.
Yeah, no, it's the only place to get good information. So you lose efficiency with optimizer systems, you lose reliability with module level rapid shutdown, but RSDs on the string side, if it's just, you know, a dumb shutting down the panel, some of those are pretty unreliable. And I've had very visible burn marks on panels shattered because it hasn't started any fires on a roof that I've seen, thankfully. But it's not a great solution. It's not a safe solution. It's going to require firefighters to be out at systems more often, which, if you're increasing the number of fires in solar arrays, it's by default going to be more dangerous for firefighters, regardless of the electricity. And that's where we get to UL 3741, like, where it's supposed to test it has you put your system through all these tests to see, is this actually dangerous to firefighters? If we don't shut it down, if we leave it at 1,000 volts, 600 volts, 1,000 volts, is a firefighter going to get shocked and possibly to death from this system? And that's what UL 3741 is really trying to certify, right? So the nice thing about what we're finding, Iron Ridge just came out with their flush mount racking for residential stuff and have that UL 3741 listed now. Like, by all accounts, the way they have it set up is it doesn't appear that the way systems are installed actually endangers firefighters via electric shock at all, because the restrictions are not terribly restrictive and it doesn't require shutdown.
Okay, so let me talk about some of the things that you brought up too. So like one of the things for rapid shutdown is it's put in place for firefighter safety, not to prevent fires. So it's sort of like catch 22 or some kind of loop there, because like, well, if you start a fire, that's not too good for firefighter safety anyway. But a lot of people think like, oh, it's to prevent fires. And that's not what the intent was behind rapid shutdown.
There is a lot of argumentation I'll get sometimes, be like, where somebody jumps on another topic in talking about this subject, being like, oh, but it's supposed to prevent fires, or it's supposed to, like, I don't know, what about arc fault protection? And like, people get off on rabbit trails around this topic a lot. But you're right, it's supposed to be for firefighter safety.
And so one kind of way that I look at it too, with some of these devices, there's all kinds of different ways of doing it. But if you have a device that is not doing maximum PowerPoint tracking that's up there, it's sort of like you're just opening a circuit on the roof. And so perhaps, like I said, I don't take sides, but there is a side to that that says that if you're opening a circuit that's 1,000 volts DC, there might be some kind of problem there as far as it could arc, because the higher the voltage gets, when you open that circuit, it's more likely to arc. And then there's all different types of ways to open that circuit. If you were doing maximum PowerPoint tracking, you could kind of slow down the current before you turn it off, open the circuit. So just some other things that I've sort of thought about out there. And so that is like the argument that I see out there right now too. People are saying that, well, these devices can start fires, and then we should be doing something like not doing module level shutdown. And I'm sure that's the side that you're on, that you do. I know another guy too, I call him a string inverter activist. And I saw that you were at RE Plus. You might've seen him. His name's Peter Greenberg, and he's an Oregon
guy. We actually had a phone conversation. He said, you sent him my video, and then like, hey, give me a call. And we talked for a while. It was lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he's a cool, interesting guy. He always wears shorts, and he's got this green t-shirt that's showing his statement about how these certain devices have started fires on jobs that he did. And I kind of feel bad for him, because he's installing solar and then the system has to shut down and it catches on fire and stuff like that. And so that's not a good thing.
Yeah. The base thing is it creates more complexity. Like module level rapid shutdown as a whole, if we take out the whole idea of it is necessary to protect firefighters, then we suddenly have all these other things that are now really important to consider. Like, if firefighters are actually safe touching 1,000 volts in their gear, then what are we doing this for? And if we're doing this for nothing, then we have to reckon with the idea that these systems are making our solar in America, that we're trying to push to, like, we are in a push to create a lot more solar, a lot more storage systems in the US. It's making our systems less efficient. It's making our systems less reliable. It's making our systems more expensive. And it's just sucking up everybody's time. And I said in the video, like, I don't mind that Enphase and SolarEdge exist. Like, they have products that appeal to a certain market, which is great. And I don't, you know, have any problem with that. But it does feel like we were lobbied into a situation where many of these companies got to profit off of a regulation that doesn't mean anything, based on what we're seeing come out of UL 3741.
The aliens that killed JFK are part owners of SolarEdge and Enphase, and that came up with this whole thing?
It does make me sound a bit conspiratorial, doesn't it? No, it's just following.
Conspiracies are fun. Yeah.
They are. Yeah. I try to be as least conspiratorial as possible, because, you know, I want to still be credible. Right. But I mean,
you can go back and look at the Jack Ruby colored beard. And
yeah. You know, I'm a bit strange. I'm all right with that.
Yeah.
But I mean, you can go back and look through the code proposals for like, what are the companies in the market that decided to push these particular proposals forward? And it's right there in the proposals. I know that there's a lot of code that gets done and suggested by companies who have tech and that do profit off of it that are measurably better improvements in the electrical field, right? So like ground fault detection and arc fault detection becoming more popular in the code itself, just in general electrical terms, certainly that's probably pushed by a lot of certain manufacturers, but also on balance, it's a better regulation, right? It does protect more people. It's not that much more crazy of an obligation, right? Like arc faults have gotten better over the years. Ground faults are great regardless. I'm sure there's people out there that would disagree with me on that.
Yeah, we loved all those faults. It just gives us some business, right? Ground faults,
go out and press
faults.
A button, charge them $100.
And by the way, too, usually when we're talking about ground faults and arc faults, we are talking about the DC side of the inverter, and our inverters have ground fault detection and arc fault protection on the DC side, typically. Unless you're talking about large central inverters, you might not have DC arc fault protection.
Yeah. Yep.
So another thing too is I have some good friends too. They're helping write the original rapid shutdown that kind of led to a lot of this. And one of the things that they were saying is that it was intended to have no more than about 3 modules in series for that 3741, and that they did some testing on wet firefighters. And they found out that once you started putting more than about 3 modules in series, I think it's like 160 something volts, perhaps 60 cell modules. Anyway, when you started doing that, then you could have some firefighters get shocked.
Mm. I'm not familiar with that particular part of it. I have not committed UL 3741 to memory. So
yeah,
it's possible there's something in there that I missed.
And then also too, like I guess my friend Bill, he says that 3741 is the most complicated standard ever written in the PV industry, and that the people that are even doing the test don't understand it.
That's also possible too, but like we need to settle on something. Part of the problem is it feels like we sort of went overboard, you know, 2014 to 2020 in order to help firefighters feel safe, which is not a bad thing. But I look at the rest of the globe. I don't think anybody has implemented something like this. Like the Australia is the thing that has, you know, put in something similar to that. They have roof isolators, right? But then they just repealed that because that was starting too many fires. And like, if we want solar to become a sustainable industry to itself, we probably need to take a look again at some of these regulations and really, really make sure that this is important. Or maybe the other avenue is training firefighters better to understand systems. I know that's something that we do as much as we can. We go to the local fire departments of, you know, systems that we install and help them understand, like, what are you looking at? What does this system do? What do you do if this catches fire? What can you touch? What can't you touch? You know, that kind
of
stuff.
I just thought of the solution. For firefighters, we give them a 60% tax credit when they put solar on.
There
then
you go.
They'll all know about it because their systems would pay off really quick.
Honestly,
you hear that?
That's not the worst idea in the world.
That's the best idea in the world. So all you political people out there in Washington, D.C., we just figured out the solution. 60% tax credit for firefighters. Heck, 120%, like the 120% rule. That'll do it.
Oh, man.
And that's a good way to respect the firefighters, too. And then they can learn about it. And they'll be up there with their voltmeters and stuff, knowing what's going on if they have it themselves. Maybe they only get the tax credit if they're using like an old string inverter.
Yeah, you know. But yeah, you got to train the firefighters to go up when the fire starts. They get their multimeter out very carefully, go up to the roof, check stuff, make sure they know what voltage they're dealing with before they start fighting the raging fire that's on the belt. This is a joke. That's
yeah.
Not a,
and
that's
then
not
also the thing is, we're not expecting that the fire was started by solar. It's they were probably doing something illegal in their basement or, you know, something like that.
Oh, man. So again, on the firefighter safety stuff, I know you mentioned the 3 module thing. I would love to find a source for that and look into that more myself, because I heard that from somebody else as well. Somebody commented that either on LinkedIn or on YouTube. I haven't found a source for that yet. If you find one, I'd love to hear
it. Yeah, I have it somewhere. I can't remember where it is, but I'll send it to you and maybe include it in the show notes.
That'd be great. But what I cited in my video was a couple of studies that found that firefighters were not under lethal danger under 1,000 volts or 1,000 volts or less.
I know, we don't need
their equipment on.
Wimpy firefighters that can only handle 900 volts.
And the other thing is, like, I don't think we have any statistics of firefighters harmed by electric shock. I would love to have those. Like, I don't know if nobody's decided to track it or if we've just decided we're going to get ahead of this thing before, or, you know, the statistics, which isn't a bad strategy, but
dead people don't talk.
Are helpful. Yeah.
So just kidding. So the three in series two, I was wondering, you were talking a little bit about a residential 3741 system. Maybe it was something to do with Iron Ridge. And yeah. I looked around. I didn't really see anything there. Is that out yet? Have you seen it?
It is. So it's their XR rail. And this is not a sponsored thing. Iron Ridge and I didn't really coordinate as such. Mm-hmm. I just had some information.
No, that's cool.
That this was
I like
coming.
The Iron Ridge people. My good friends work there.
Mm-hmm. So it's their XR rail that they have certified under UL 3741. And they have an addendum, you know, on their website for
it
that.
Works for
they have
residential.
A press release out. Yep. Yep.
And so is it work with a particular inverter?
Yes. So it is specifically rated at this point for Tesla equipment. So they have a string isolator that you would use coming in or out of an array, and then their string inverter, whatever that is. I have never used that, so I can't speak to the quality of that inverter, but that's what's currently listed with the rail right now. And I would assume, I am 90% sure that we'll hear more about other inverters coming out in the next couple of months that are listed with this rail as well.
That's interesting for a couple of reasons. One is that Tesla, they bought up the ZEP racking company, where it's a railless system, so that they are using Iron Ridge, which might be considered a competitor there too. But it's also interesting to me because Tesla kind of keeps stuff secret. Like, you don't just go to the website and go like, oh, I want to see the installation manual of the Tesla inverter. And I have seen some things. And what's kind of interesting is sometimes where I see things from Tesla is some authorities having jurisdiction, AHJ, will actually post some of their permit packages. And so I've seen some of that. And when you said string isolator, it could mean a couple of different things. One of them is like the old 2014 or pre-2019 rapid shutdown, where you just shut it off at the array level. But then also, they had what's called a mid-circuit interrupter. And I have a feeling that they're using that where they can separate them out in sections of three modules, which kind of brings you back to electronics on the roof, but it's just a third of them.
Well, as it was shown in Iron Ridge's documentation, there were more than three panels in series at once, I believe. I would have to check. But it was more arranged so that at the end of the array, you would have like the mid-circuit interrupter.
Okay. Like, or I guess if it was at the end of the string, then I would call that an end of circuit interrupter, or like a string isolator or something like that. But if it's in between,
but if you have
a string
of
modules.
Yeah. But if you have like a string going across arrays, right? You could have the string isolator start on the end of the one array and another string isolator on the other array. That's how it was in their documentation anyway.
All right. I'll have to check that out. So
yeah, I'll send you the document afterwards.
Yeah. Awesome. We can maybe like post it up here so people can check it out. So let's see some other things that I saw. I was just kind of looking through your videos, and one of them was like water coming out of, what was it, a junction box or something like that?
Oh my goodness. That was a fun job. By which I mean, it was not very fun, but that was great for viral video stuff. That's for sure.
What did you do? Just stick a hose in there for the video? Just kidding.
No, that was actual, like, with the running of the system. That's what was happening at that point. So
was the system on when that was?
The system was still on. It was still running fine. No ground faults. That THHN was sure doing its due business. Or
that's
THWN
awesome.
Too, whatever. Okay. But the problem there was, at some point, our pipe got crushed. So it was a ground mount. Way far out, there was a horse riding arena in between, and then our inverters, you know, kind of on the other side. And at some point, either nobody glued the pipe or the pipe got crushed. And their draining system for the riding arena, which they watered with like hundreds of gallons of water, like twice a day, failed. So their drainage system failed and it was coming back through in our electrical pipe and like spurting out the box.
Dual use, water-cooled conductors. By the way, too, you said THWN2. And so that is a wire that we typically use inside of conduit. It's a single conductor wire, and it's got an insulation that you can put in places like outside as long as it's in conduit. And it stands for T, thermoplastic, H, heat, W, wet, in nylon, and dash two up to 90 degrees Celsius. Just a reminder for those non-NABCEP certified people out there, or those people that are studying for
I'm NABCEP exams. Certified three times over, and I don't always remember what that stands for. So you know, it's always a helpful reminder.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a fun series of days of trying to figure out, is this water coming from just groundwater? Did we have a leak specific, like right into our pipe? That was fun to track down. That whole series, I think, is still up on TikTok if you want to go back and
I think I just saw it just like this morning. I saw it somewhere. So maybe we will try to link to some of those fun videos that you have there. And another thing that I saw that you were doing that I thought was kind of neat is you're up on a rooftop and you had a number of Solar Edge inverters and one of the breakers tripped. And what you did to figure out what the problem was, which I thought was kind of cool, is you just switched the wires from one inverter to the breaker to the other inverter to the breaker. And so you would know if it was the inverter problem or the breaker problem.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, it's classic troubleshooting technique. If you can somehow replicate the scenario, but change it for a different device and it still does the thing, you can narrow down to whether it's the device on this side or that device, or, you know, a wiring issue. That's the kind of stuff I got to do as a operations and maintenance guy is, or girl, is narrow down where the problem could possibly be coming from. Yeah. Gender neutral solar boy.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. A lot of times people too, they're saying like, what do I need to do to study for the NABCEP PV commissioning and maintenance specialist exam, PVCMS? And I tell them, you just really need to understand how the stuff works, and then it will just make sense. And you can kind of just figure it out on your own.
Yeah, when I was taking that test, so I did the PVIP first, and then I did the PVCMS. And I did pretty good on the PVIP. So I was like, yeah, PVCMS, it'll be probably pretty similar. And I'm also coming off of a lot of experience from electrical code tests. So I know my code knowledge, or how to get to code knowledge, pretty well. But what struck me about the PVCMS is how much like real world, non-codebook specific stuff is in there. Like, they really want to make sure that you understand how the solar is working or how a solar system should be installed, not just to code standards, but like just the logic of the system and how might this failure happen, you know, that kind of thing. So there's more theory, but also more practical stuff that just isn't in a reference book, which is a different kind of test than I was used to taking up till then with electrical tests.
Do you run into very much of like the older type of stuff, like fuse grounded string inverters, and it's got the ground fault fuse in it and all that kind of stuff with the white neutral wire or the white grounded conductor, all that kind of stuff?
Oh yeah, that all is still out there, man. It'll be out there till it fails. And a lot of it is still running really well. The nice thing is a lot of that stuff can be pretty easily updated to ungrounded inverters. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as you don't have to put in additional fuses, you know, depending on how many strings there are, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And so also, let's just kind of talk about that a little bit too. So you got what they used to call grounded inverters and ungrounded inverters. And so the grounded inverters were the ones that had a fuse in there, and the fuse was usually bonding the neutral, or I should say the grounded conductor, to the ground. And then if that fuse opened up, that's how you detect a ground fault. And then the ungrounded inverters do all that stuff through electronics. They're much more sensitive. They essentially do what's called an insulation test or a Megger test. So the new name that they've used to classify these types of systems is they just call them functionally grounded because they're not solidly grounded. One of the things too that a lot of times people complain about is they get the old inverter and then they swap it with a new one. And so the formerly known as ungrounded inverter, and it's so good at finding ground faults that you install it and then it just like ground fault all the time and it doesn't work essentially. So you probably run into that yourself, I guess.
I have had that happen. It's great when you have an inverter fail and then you replace it with a new one and then you find all these faults that the old inverter should have been finding, mm-hmm. but it wasn't as good at doing that. And now you got to talk to the customer and be like, all right, so now I need to completely try to search through your system to figure out what's going mm-hmm. on here and maybe replace a bunch of these solar panels. And I had one system like that where I installed like a bigger central inverter with a couple of Fronius SIMOs or something like that. And powering on the system, just immediate ground fault for like each one of them. So now I'm like, okay, I got to go through and find what's going on. And it was probably a 15-year-old system. Like it was probably mid-aughts, like before tax credits type of stuff. So this is pretty darn old. And what happened was basically a lot of these solar panels degraded to the point where a bunch of them were leaking through the frame enough where mm-hmm. it kept kicking off the inverter. And that was not fun for the customer. It was mm-hmm. fun to track down, but you know.
Yeah. And so, when he was saying that they were leaking through the frame and you can have it leaking mm-hmm. through the glass and stuff like that, it's sort of like a spectrum. You have a conductor mm-hmm. and an insulator. So the conductor would be like copper, and then the insulator would be like the insulation around the copper, but also insulating your solar cells is things like glass and frames and stuff like that. And sometimes you get some leakage current through those things and mm-hmm. it goes unnoticed until you put on a super sensitive inverter, and then it starts showing that there's all kinds of problems. One of the things that I've heard that some people do is they get in there and they will loosen up the specifications for when the inverter is going to trip. Maybe if they're more, a little bit more lazy, which would be a little bit less mm-hmm. safe.
Yeah, sometimes that'll happen with like arc faults and stuff. Like if there's an arc fault that's getting tripped, but you've like gone through the array with a fine tooth comb, and you can't really find anything, then they'll like back off their detection a little bit. Usually you have to call into tech support for that. So you can't just do it as a maintenance tech. You have to kind of get the manufacturer's blessing before that happens.
Yep. And so an arc fault, what an arc fault is you have a circuit, and then some of that electricity is arcing. So it's essentially going through air, and it could happen because of a bad connection where you screw in the wire or you attach a couple of modules together. And that's what an arc fault is. And our inverters, mm-hmm. the newer inverters, are better at detecting arc faults than the older inverters. It was kind of hard when they first figured it out. Like when the 2011 NEC came out, they had the first requirement. It was actually 690.11 in the 2011 NEC for DC arc fault protection. And it took them about 3 years before anybody figured out how to do that. So they couldn't enforce it because if there's no equipment, you can't enforce it. And so people weren't doing DC arc fault protection pretty much until about 2014.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's about right. And yeah, that early stuff, depending on the manufacturer, was rough. It's gotten way better since then.
Mm-hmm. Great. So let's see. So we're having a lot of fun. You know what we can do is just let's have you talk about where people can find you.
Sure. So you can find me on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram. I'm The Solar Boy on TikTok and Instagram, and Derek The Solar Boy on YouTube. If you're into Twitter-like things, you can follow me on Mastodon. I've gotten off of Twitter and gone on to Mastodon, which is more of a open social network type of thing. If you're not into that, that's okay. But you can find me there at solarboy at mastodon.energy.
Awesome. Solarboy at mastodon.energy. And yeah, so Mastodon is like an old style elephant.
Yeah, it's pretty punk. It's kind of fun.
Until the
you can also find me on Threads, which is Instagram's counterpart to that.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And I think we could find all of your stuff over at your website.
Yes. I do blog over there from time to time. So sometimes I'll hit a problem that I figure out that I haven't taken video of, but I still want to share with people because it's interesting and somebody might find it useful. So you can follow my blog at solarboy.com, again, with an I instead of a Y. A couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was about a month or two ago at this point, I ran into a really weird situation with a Fronius inverter. It was triggering some sort of fault where it would shut down for most of the day because of a certain preference it had for one of two MPPTs. And that's getting a lot more technical than we'll read well in a podcast. But It was interesting, and you should go check that out because that was a fun problem to solve.
Cool. Awesome. All right. So is anything else we want to hit, or we can maybe do it again sometime?
I would love to do it again sometime, Sean. I appreciate you having me on. Been following your podcast for a while, and I appreciate what you do for the industry. So, yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Derek the Solar Boy. And thanks for listening to Sean White's Solar and Energy Storage Podcast. To find out more, go to solarsean.com, where you can get classes. You can hire me to come out and we can hang out. We can do some solar education stuff. You could bring me to the Bahamas. We could do a class there. I love doing crazy stuff like that. So take care and take it easy.